This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, in the UK this week, the former Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, published his resignation honours list. That's the right every Prime Minister has to send people to the Lords, give them a knighthood or some other gong. Remarkably, Boris Johnson decided to give his father a knighthood. His father is a controversial character. They're not believed to get on very well. And he has some form. Does this bring to an end the Boris Johnson show? I doubt it. He's on manoeuvres. He's after Rishi Sunak. And, of course, given the state of the British economy and the Tory party, nobody can rule a return of Boris Johnson out. I'm joined now by Chris Johns. Chris is former chief economist with the Bank of Ireland and now a respected commentator. Chris, this knighthood for his father, in the list of Boris scandals, it probably features nowhere, but it is characteristically brazen. And I was thinking that it's 7 years now since the referendum in 2016 when Britain decided to leave. Johnson led the campaign, the Leave campaign, subsequently in 2019 became Prime Minister, went through Partygate, scandal after scandal, and he won't go away, will he?
No, he's going to be around for a very long time, I fear. This knighthood for his dad, I think missed the trick, actually. I say this somewhat tongue-in-cheek, that if he'd thought this through, and of course Johnson rarely thinks anything through, rather than what he's going to do for the next 10 minutes, he would have given his father an hereditary peerage. Which I think, you know, would have given him a title for when Stanley shuffles off this mortal coil. It elicited two reactions in the UK. One was just a shrug, and, you know, people just attention moved elsewhere. And relatedly, it was more of a what do you expect? This is what Johnson is like. So I think that the normalization of this kind of behavior is perhaps the most worrying aspect of it. That people weren't surprised. Nobody was astonished. His sister, Rachel Johnson, went on the airwaves the day after trying to justify it. I wasn't quite sure whether she was being serious or whether she was almost trying to suppress a giggle when she was saying nice things about her father and the reasons why he deserved this honor. But it's low down on the list of what Johnson has done over the years, but it's just part of a piece, isn't it?
It is indeed, but the cost for Britain has been remarkable, really. There's been five prime ministers now, going back to David Cameron, then Theresa May, and after Theresa May, Boris Johnson, and then we have Liz Truss, and now Rishi Sunak. Sunak, in his dealings with Europe, and they are particularly relevant to us here, appeared to show some spirit and some guts last week. But he is very much on Johnson's hit list, isn't he?
Very much so. Johnson blames him for losing number 10 Downing Street. And it was Sunak's resignation as Chancellor that was, I think, the final straw. And Johnson not only wishes to have his revenge and to do Sunak down, He still clings, I hope forlornly, to the hope that there is a route back to 10 Downing Street for him. He's backed off on this particular issue of Europe, and in particular the deal over the Northern Ireland Protocol. It was instructive to watch a speech he made to a gathering in London shortly after that SUDAC deal was announced. And he, for once, had a rare moment of both honesty and insight in the same sentence, in which he said, look, I'm against it, but I'm reading the room here, and this was the audience that he was talking to, but he's also referring to the country at large. This is something that you all want. I can feel that. I can sense it. So the implication was, I'm going to back off. I'm not going to make a particular fuss about this particular issue, but I'm still here. I'm still waiting. I'm not going to vote for it if and when it comes to Parliament, but something else will come along, I think was the subtext, the hidden words, if you like, of what he was saying, is that there will come an issue in which I can challenge Sunak on, and you will support me. You will be on my side. You're not on my side for this one. I can see that. He read the room correctly, and he's just lying in the long grass waiting now.
Now, in the process of leaving Europe and taking Northern Ireland with him, he lied to the Irish government, he lied to the DUP, and he lied to Europe. He lies habitually. What is it, Chris, that the British people find attractive about? I can understand why the Tories want him. Isn't it the case that they're facing into electoral Armageddon, if the opinion polls are to be believed? And there's a large section, or a substantial section, of the Tory party that believe he's the only guy who can save them.
Yes, they do believe that. I think they're wrong. I think that the British people in the round, on average, if you like, have tired of Johnson, have tired of his lies, have tired of him not actually doing anything to make their lives better.
Yes.
Because life over the last few years in Britain has got steadily worse from an economic, social and political perspective. There's now enough degradation of ordinary life for everybody, if not to notice it in their own lives, to notice it in the situation around them, and to know that nothing is being done about it. Nothing has been done about the state of the NHS, the railways, public services generally. All sorts of things about Britain that need fixing have not been fixed in these internecine Brexit wars that Johnson launched, was responsible for, and really got elected with his 80-seat majority to carry on. He sees the route to his success as being one, a path of carrying on these culture wars, whereas I think the British people, most of us, not all of us, most of us have tired of them and really are looking to politicians to start fixing things. And this is Rishi Sunak's strength, is that from this deal that he's done with the European Union, he has acquired a shimmer, a sheen, a patina of competence, of being able to get something done to make something better. And if he can follow it up with some other things, I think actually that's the route that their best chance that the Conservatives have to regaining something resembling electoral success. I'm not saying he can close the gap with Labour as it is at the moment, but I do think Sunak is a much better person for the Conservatives, much better politician for the Conservatives than Johnson will ever be. I think it's a myth. It's a look backwards thing to the past where Johnson was an electoral asset. I think he's become an electoral liability. Just look at the opinion polls from his own constituency, Eamon.
Yes.
If there was a by-election in Uxbridge tomorrow, he would be absolutely trounced. He may not even come third. And that's the problem. He's no longer the electoral asset, even in his own constituencies, definitely not the country at large. So I think those Tories, those Tory MPs, those members of the party that look on him fondly, are a minority in the country now. And they're making a big mistake. Their best route back to electoral success would be to give Sunak their wholehearted backing and to just move on from the Johnson era. But like, I suppose, those Japanese soldiers who were found in the jungle years after World War II ended, some people just want to carry on fighting.
Yes, and the case Johnson has to answer for misleading Parliament is now before the ultimate committee, there are four instances in which it is believed, and it's clear in fact, that he did mislead Parliament about the parties that he not only knew about, but was at. And if they find against him, if they find he has misled Parliament, that's a very serious offence, and it could lead to him being, as it were, recalled, which means he'd have to resign his seat and fight it again.
That is one possibility. The favourite in Westminster at the moment, and nobody's really quite sure how this is going to go, but the mutterings that I've heard is that he won't come out of this well, but it won't amount to that kind of punishment. He'll get more of a rap on the knuckles with a month's suspension from the House. And that may not lead to the nuclear outcome that you just suggested there for Johnson. So he is in trouble on this. But of course, when the initial reports of what that committee was up to came out last week, he immediately claimed that they had vindicated him.
Yes.
This is the extraordinary post-truth or fact-free world that Johnson is trying to create or still lives in himself, when it was quite clear that the committee had found even more photographs and more evidence than Sue Gray ever did and has published some of these things. They have come out. So how you can then claim vindication from this is was utterly beyond me and utterly beyond, frankly, an awful lot of his backbenchers as well. There was a headline, I think it was in the London Times, by saying that finally Johnson, I think, yes, it was Saturday's Times, Johnson goes full Trump and he's entered this post-truth, post-fact universe that the Trumpian types live in.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What has been his bequest to the Tory party, Chris? I was looking at the Home Secretary today, Suella Braverman. She's trying to deal, or says she is, it's her responsibility as Home Secretary, with the immigration crisis. She is the person who stood at the dispatch box a few weeks ago and said her dream was to see a 747 taking off from Heathrow full of what she called illegal immigrants headed for Rwanda. He has bequeathed to the Tory party some desperate-looking people who don't look fit for office or even for Parliament. There seems to be, at the heart of the Tory party, something really rotten. It's reflected in sleaze in many instances, but also in the kind of hard right policies that you might think a far right party rather than the Tories would have.
Well, these policies are far right policies. I think the time has come, or maybe it came a long time ago, to call them what they are, to call it out. And this immigration policy is definitely up there with anything that you might describe as far right.
Yes.
If you start with the title of the bill that they've kind of sort of published, but not published, that's instructive in and of itself, is that they don't want the legal eagles getting at it too quickly because they're trying to write it as we speak. And it's called the Illegal Immigration Bill. Now, just think about that for a second. The bill itself is calling itself illegal, which is really, really strange PR, strange comms.
Yeah.
And the really strange thing is that the legal types that have had a look at it insofar as they can think that this law, bizarrely, is going to be illegal. It could breach UK law, some precedent decisions made by the appeal court relatively recently, and it almost certainly breaks Britain's obligations to international treaties. So the law that they're trying to pass is illegal. It, as you know, from that statement that she made about putting people on a plane to Rwanda, they've been trying to do this for nearly a year now.
A dream.
A dream. To put people on a plane to Rwanda. First of all, the deal apparently looks like it was only set up to send a few hundred people in the first place. So it's hardly... It's a tragedy, certainly, for anybody that ends up being part of that if they eventually do have to be sent there. But Rwanda was paid £120 million, a small change for Britain, a big deal for Rwanda. If it was the other way around, do you know what that would have meant to Britain? If Rwanda was given to Britain the proportionately similar sum of money, it would have been £40 billion. That's what that sum of money meant to Kagame of Rwanda. He's played the British government very, very well here, because as you know, not a single person has been sent to Rwanda. And I would bet you that nobody ever does go because of all of these legal impediments, because this is just pure performative politics. It's posturing, but it's also wicked posturing. And as I say, the time has come to call this out. You probably do know that Gary Lineker has entered this particular arena.
I do, yes. He entered it yesterday, and I have to say, I didn't think what he said was accurate. He likened Suella Braverman and her bill to something the Nazis would have...
What he said precisely, Amy, was that the language being used was similar to the Nazis. And if people have gone back and had a look at some 1930s German newspapers, and there are similarities, actually, the language. And this is why it's important to call this out, because the language being used... the demonization of foreigners, the demonization of ethnic people, the demonization of these poor people who arrive on boats. I think that there are some broad similarities. But okay, we can agree to disagree over whether Lineker was accurate in his statement, but he has the right to make those statements. It's a country of free speech.
Yeah.
And interestingly, all of the people that have crawled out of the woodwork condemning him and saying that he should be fired from the BBC, that it was a disgrace that he said this, are all people who normally are jumping up and down, crying out for free speech, and are decrying people who, in universities and other people, who try to no-platform people as snowflakes, and that we need to be more robust in our defense of free speech, until somebody like Gary Lineker pops up and says what he has to say. It's all very well for somebody, do you remember the name Marc Francois? I think he's now head of the ERG. He said the EU was a Nazi regime.
Yeah.
Did anybody ever call him out on this?
No.
So it's very two-sided. It's very hypocritical, two-faced. And I think that it is a particularly nasty, vicious policy. It was very interesting to listen to Sunak make his speech yesterday. I don't know if he watched it when he was standing on his podium. In Downing Street, introducing the no boats law, this to try and honour the one of five promises that he's made.
No small boats.
Yes, and he said that the people who have crossed multiple countries and have the resources to pay the people smugglers across to get them across the channel can't be that desperate.
Yes.
Yeah. It was extraordinary stuff.
Yes.
And this is all throwing red meat to some whether it's real or imagined, I don't know, conservative base, because you might ask me about what the British people think about this.
What I'm going to ask you about, but more specifically, Chris, is there are rumours that Johnson is looking for a safe Tory seat, and it's clear that he's still popular with a section or a segment of the Tory party. Is it the members of the Tory party?
Yes, it's a handful of backbenchers, probably about, well, they say a handful, a large number of backbenchers, probably about 100 would like to have him back. And certainly I would say the vast majority of the membership, the people on the ground of the Tory party, would like him back. Now, the thing I would say to Sunak, the unsolicited advice I would give him is just don't let him do it. One of the ways to see Johnson off is just to keep him in his Uxbridge constituency. Don't let him have another one. Because I think it is in Sunak's power to deny him this under the rules of the Tory party.
Yeah, and the problem that Sunak has is, well, that everybody has, is that at every opportunity, the ghosts come up, the ghosts of Boris. Sue Gray, for example, I think unwisely that Sir Keir Starmer said she'd been appointed now as his chief of staff for the Labour Party. And that has caused some disquiet, shall we say, because she was the person who did the famous or infamous Sue Gray report investigation into Johnson's behaviour during the Partygate scandal. And she's the one who, as it were, produced a definitive report. The case being made against her is that she had a massive conflict of interest if she was talking to Keir Starmer at the same time she was investigating the Prime Minister of the day, Boris.
Yeah. The Sue Gray thing about going off to being Keir Starmer's chief of staff is both right and wrong. It's right in the sense that, you know, all the letter of the law will be obeyed. There will be gardening leave. It will be referred to a particular committee that judges these things and normally reaches a determination about how long, in this particular case, the civil servant, sometimes it's a politician, has to do gardening leave. No doubt that there will be lots of versions of the Official Secrets Act that she will have to sign, non-disclosure arrangements, and it will all be done absolutely fine. She's an absolutely outstanding candidate for the job. There is plenty of precedent for both politicians and civil servants to be moving into these kinds of roles in the past. It has happened previously. It's wrong because it just simply handed the Tories a stick with which to beat Keir Starmer. So it's politically tin-eared, a bit dopey, if you ask me. That if I had been asked, I would have said, don't do it. It is absolutely a good idea. She will be a brilliant chief of staff. There's nothing technically wrong. It is both within the letter and, frankly, the spirit of all of the rules that she can do this. There is plenty of precedent for it, but you're going to get slaughtered in the right-wing media and by the Tory party. It's going to be a distraction when you've got all these things going on in the country that need to be being debated. Don't let them hijack the agenda with another Sue Gray story. But he went ahead and did it anyway. I don't understand the politics of it. I understand the logic of it in terms of her being absolutely brilliant for the role, but it was daft. And it did hand the Tories yet another thing to push up the agenda,
yes,
to get the Daily Mail headlines about Sue Gray, to get Boris Johnson was allowed to say that he was stitched up, that it was all a socialist plot to get him out of office, all of this conspiracy nonsense. Just as the boat story serves a number of objectives, one being red meat to the backbenches and to the members of the Tory party and to the Daily Mail. The other is it gets all this other stuff, the cost of living crisis, the NHS crisis, trains not running, off the front pages and off the nightly news. So it's about agenda setting,
yes,
and controlling the narrative. And this is what they're very, very good at, and what I suspect Keir Starmer and Labour still haven't fully mastered.
Do you think, Chris, that, I mean, the opinion polls as they stand give Labour a lead of minimum 20 percentage points, maximum 28 in another opinion poll. When you look around you and you're talking to us from London, do you think Labour are sure to win the next general election, or do you think there is conceivably a way back for Sunak's Tory party and all that goes with that, which is Suella Braverman and a few more? The Deputy Prime Minister, Dominic Raab, has been accused of bullying, and there are a number of civil servants who are party to that accusation. It's being investigated at the moment. If, for example, the Deputy Prime Minister is found to be guilty of bullying people in a number of departments where he was a minister, then surely the game would be up. But what's your sense of the mood of the country, Chris? There was a time, for example, when it was obvious that Blair was going to be a shoo-in. And then there was a time after the Iraq War when it was obvious he was going to be a shoo-out. What's your feeling of that mood?
Things can obviously change very quickly. But if the election was held in the next few weeks, then Keir Starmer would be a shoo-in. But Stephen Bush, who's an associate editor and yes, political columnist at the Financial Times, very, very good writer, put it very well this week when he said that the Tories' best chance of electoral redemption is Rishi Sunak. He agrees with me that Sunak is an electoral asset. And I do think that over the next few weeks, we will see something of a little bounce in the opinion polls, partly thanks to the deal that he has done with the EU over the Northern Ireland Protocol. He will get some political credit for that. Stephen Bush put it this way. He said the right way to run the next general election campaign, which now looks likely to be next year, possibly this year, but probably next, is to run it as a vote for Rishi Sunak and then sotto voce, put it in the footnote. Unfortunately, he has a Conservative Party attached to him.
Yeah,
and that, I think, captures it very well, is the Conservative Party, that label, that name is toxic now, right now. But Sunak is their best hope of at least taking a little bit of the edge off that. If they run on that strategy, I think he can close the gap.
Yeah,
I doubt that he can close it fully, but there are plenty of political thinkers in this country who think that for that reason, because Sunak is good at what he's doing, with the small exception of the small boats, of course, you probably can hear that I feel quite strongly about that.
Yes.
But he is very good politically in the round, and that he will close that gap with Labour. You combine that with the way in which the British first past the post system combines with the way all the different boundaries are. So what do I mean by that? I mean, an awful lot of those Labour excess votes are going to be wasted because they won't matter, because they will be in constituencies that would have elected a Labour member anyway. So a lot depends on how that electoral arithmetic falls. But the smarter analysts, I think, are saying, well, Sunak will close the gap. The way the electoral system works in the UK will actually lead to a hung parliament.
Yes, they have a big gap of 80. They have an 80-seat majority.
Mm.
The thing that Sunak will have to do at some stage, Chris, is face up to the DUP, who may well reject the agreement that he's done with Europe, the part of it that, and it's a major part of it, that has to do with the Northern Ireland Protocol. Now, he stood up to his own backbenchers on that matter, and he showed some political courage. What's he going to do if the DUP say, no thanks?
I think he's going to say to them, take it or leave it. And let the dice fall where they may.
Right.
And of course, that raises huge implications for
yes,
the
does.
Restoration of power sharing. It may not happen, probably won't happen in those circumstances, which of course has huge implications for the whole of Ireland. But I suspect that Sunak knows, I'd be pretty sure he knows, that this is the best deal he's ever going to get on this issue from
yes.
the EU. He's got far more concessions than Johnson was ever close to getting, that Johnson even thought of asking for, actually. So that the EU has done him a favour. I think the people who matter in the Tory party know this. I think Johnson has caught the mood of the people of the country at large, in that what actually happened over the last couple of weeks is that, now this may well be temporary, it may well be very ephemeral, but there was a sense of thank God it's over.
Yes.
Thank God this Brexit thing has finally been done. We can now focus on something else. Nobody in this country wants to talk about Brexit ever again.
Chris, that the opinion polls on this now show about 65% of British people regretting the Leave vote?
Yes, there is huge regret. It is showing up in a very large gap between those who think that leaving was in fact a good idea and those that think it was a terrible idea. Those of us that always thought it was a terrible idea are now very much in the majority. But that the way that shows up in the national mood really is no great appetite to re-engage with the Brexit wars. We're fed up with that. There's no appetite to re-litigate the referendum, and there's certainly no appetite to start any process to go back into the EU. This is something that everybody just wants to forget about, move on, and start dealing with other problems. And I think this is where Sunak has got an edge, because I think this is what Johnson, you remember I mentioned earlier, that he caught this mood. He realized that this was the mood of people, that people just wanted to move on from this stuff. They don't want these Brexit culture wars anymore, which is why he's backed off on this issue. And from being quite noisy at first, has gone very, very quiet. He's still there,
yes.
As I say, still waiting. But this wanting to move on from all of this is something that Sunak is quite capable of capitalizing on, I think.
Well, let's finish on a controversial note, Chris, our conversation. The one thing that can be said in Johnson's favor is that his intervention when he was prime minister in Ukraine was swift. The first European, or even perhaps even swifter than the Americans, the move to give weapons to Ukraine to get 100% behind them with whatever Britain could do to help. And that should be said, should it not? Although there isn't another thing that I can think of. In fact, I can't think of another. And it leads me to the final question, and it's this. Would it be inconceivable to imagine Boris Johnson leading a Tory party to electoral victory some stage in the future?
Never say never. I would say that's still not a zero chance, but it is a shrinking chance compared to even where we were a week ago.
Right.
But as we know, the old saying in politics is that a week is a very, very long time. And I was struck by an exiled politician from Belarus, a country that borders both Ukraine and Russia, that is very much, at least in terms of its leadership, in the Russian camp, and the exile was very much not, was talking about the British politician who could do most to help the situation in Belarus in particular, but also in Ukraine. And guess who she said was the politician that she loved the most in the UK because of how much he has helped and how much he could help.
I saw the interview on Newsnight. Boris Johnson.
Absolutely.
Okay, Chris, it's great, as always, to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Chris has his own podcast with Jim Power. It's called The Other Hand, and he is always a welcome guest on The Stand. We're grateful to Chris, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.